WTIC. I can't believe it's Friday. It's so exciting how these weeks just whip by, and there we are again with Michael Harrison from Talkers Magazine. Hello there, Michael.
Hello, Todd, and a happy Friday before the great weekend of Columbus Day 2019.
Columbus Day. Are you still allowed to say that? Is that not some
sort of... I celebrate it vehemently. I celebrate it with wild abandon.
Can you say it?
Probably not.
I thought it was some kind of transgression, like people need a safe place if they hear Columbus.
I guess I'm now politically incorrect.
I am demanding that Columbus, Ohio change the name of the town.
How about the Italian that the nation's capital is named after?
Washington?
If you want, you know those trick questions like if an airplane crashes on the border between Canada and the U.S., where do they bury the survivors? And they don't bury the survivors. Or if you shoot 12 crows on a roof and you shoot one of them, how many are left? One, the one you shot, the rest fly away. You know those trick questions. Which half of the year is longer, the first half or the second half?
Oh, the second half, definitely.
But I forgot where I was going with that. Nonetheless,
well, you were just tying it in.
Yeah,
to Washington. You were making a joke about Washington.
Yeah, so if you want to confuse somebody who thinks that they're really knowledgeable about America, say, who is the Italian that the nation's capital is named after?
And they all say Columbus.
No, they don't think of it. They think of it. Washington wasn't Italian, and you know it's the District of Columbia, and there's two names to Washington. There's Washington and there's the District of Columbia, same place.
Oh, I see. So I fell for it.
You did fall for it.
I remember there's some age where those are, you know, like fourth grade or something, where those are really big and you sit there just wide-eyed at the idea that you fell for it.
Yeah. There's a whole bunch of them. And you know, they're called trick questions, but they're really not tricks.
Named after Harvey P. Trick III.
Exactly. He was quite a guy. But I just realized it's Columbus Day weekend, and you know, there's the old, you know, what kind of a holiday is it? There's Indigenous Peoples Day. And I don't know. I've always considered, and I guess what I'm saying is certainly nothing new, but I've always considered Columbus Day to be the epitome of everything that's wrong with the education of my generation.
What do you mean?
When we went to school, we were taught that Columbus discovered America. In May of 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue to find this land for me and you.
Exactly. It rhymed and everything.
I mean, you know, when you're a little kid coming into the world and finding your way and hearing that kind of stuff, I mean, you believe it.
What do you mean, believe it? Why are you suggesting that's not true?
Well, I don't know. Just something about it doesn't ring right in terms
of... No, seriously. What is the alternative narrative we should believe? There were already
I don't know
people
whether you're
here,
kidding.
I'm serious. I'm
is that
wondering,
a trick question?
Well, there's a reason that was established as part of the narrative of America, and it had to do with the perspective of Europeans coming over and establishing a country here, and they're looking at the first European.
The underlying message is totally a political and an ethnic view. If you're teaching children about humanity and you're teaching children about history, don't call the history of Western Europe world history. Call it the history of Western Europe. They used to call it world history.
But that was the perspective back then.
What's wrong with it? It's wrong. It's wrong. That's what's wrong with it. What's wrong with it is it is
most
wrong.
Of what we learn about history is wrong. Like, that's history.
I guess you're right.
It's a story.
You've convinced me. I'm wrong. You're right. You've absolutely convinced me. I shouldn't consider that to be illogical. That the history of Africa was human history. That the China was around for 5,000 years. You know, all those were not real people.
Well, I'm not suggesting that, but I'm suggesting in the perspective the people who made up those narratives, that was their worldview, and that was they were extending it out through these fables. I don't like the idea that we're bad people because we have these fables. All countries have fables about their founding,
I never said we were bad people. I said we're wrong people.
Well, I'm not saying you are, but I think this movement to drive these things out it's part of creating a new narrative about America, that America's bad and America's racist.
If you want to politicize the seeking of facts and the unveiling of truth, as being America's bad, well, then that's a sensitivity that some people have. But I would rather seek the truth and not necessarily assume that it's bad. Just assume the fact that America, like all other countries, is comprised of human beings. We have our faults. We have our inaccuracies. We're constantly trying to learn about a history of humanity.
Yeah, but isn't it possible for that statement to coexist with the celebration of Columbus sailing the ocean blue?
As long as it is celebrated within the context of the truth attached to it, that Columbus reignited interest in the Americas for colonization of countries such as France and Spain and England, you know, Western Europe.
Well, that's awesome then. I'm down with that. That sounds like a great thing to celebrate Columbus for.
Okay, well, then you go ahead and celebrate.
Wait, are you boycotting, though? I want us going
together.
I'm not
boycotting anything. I'm just I'm speaking not so profound truths, because this is not some, what I'm saying here is certainly nothing new. Mm-hmm. The thing is, I was saying it when I was like 14. Weren't the Indians here before he got here? We used to call them Indians. How did he discover something that people lived at? Well, you have to understand that we civilized the world, that we went into darkest Africa and we went to the savage Western, you know, continent, and we civilized these people and made them better, more real, more mm-hmm. real.
Well, so more in our image.
Yeah. So, but I can understand you being happy with that. And if you want to go through life living in a bubble of, you know,
I don't
comfort
need the bubble.
And security, then you go right ahead, be my guest. I still like you, Todd.
I just feel that
you're not as evolved as I am.
Well, there's no doubt about that, but okay. That's not a fair standard to hold anyone up to. You know, you got to go easy on your fellow man.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say that. That's awful. So what's going on in your world?
You are in such an amusing mood today. This is fun. What's going on? It's busy out there. Have you heard about this impeachment thing that's going on?
Are they impeaching the governor?
No, the press. The press. They're impeaching the press, apparently. I don't really
understand
what
you know
what
Trump
wrong.
Here's what Trump's got to do. Here's what he's got to do. He's got to stop talking about the impeachment. He's got to say, look, they're going to impeach me. They're going to impeach me. Let them do what they want. They could find whatever they want. I've told you what I think. I've got lawyers defending me. I've got Rudy Giuliani. I got this one. I got that one. Put together a defense team. I am the president of the United States. I have a job to do. I have another year left or so on my term. I hope to have another term after that. We have to build a wall. We have to continue working on immigration. We have to continue to deal with an international situation. We've got North Korea. I'm working on trade deals with China. I'm trying to pull us out of the Middle East. I'm trying to keep the economy moving. I've got work to do. I'm not talking about anything but that. I'm going to do the people's business. And as far as the impeachment's concerned, you're not going to hear another word from me about it. That would be the smartest thing that he could do.
Yes, but people have been saying that to and about Donald Trump since he got into politics, and maybe before, and he's never listened. So I suspect he just does not subscribe to any theories like that. And I have a feeling he just operates in a different modality than most humans do. He doesn't have a superego, I think. That's the monitoring device in your psyche, right? Or in your psychology, he doesn't supervise his thoughts and actions with this kind of conscience that the rest of us have. People will think I'm stupid. People will think I'm mean. He just does what he feels, and what he feels seems to be that he has to fight viciously against whatever is being thrown into his face, regardless of what political wisdom says is best for him. And so far, I guess he's been proving us wrong, because he seems to win these battles.
I get
a point for that. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Is that what the bell was for?
That was what the bell was for.
Oh, good. I'm leading 1-0.
I want to apologize for the bell. What happens is that when I scratch my nose, this ringing goes off ever since I became a grandfather, and I can't understand why, but it certainly gets
great
attention.
Bell. It's not, a lot of other people.
Let's back up. Forget the bell. Let's back up to this point about Trump. You're absolutely right, and it's very interesting psychoanalyzing him. However, it doesn't invalidate what I said. It's what he should do.
Yeah.
Because eventually, look at the fix he's getting himself into. Look at this quicksand of crap that he is sinking in. Whether it's right, whether it's wrong, whether he deserves to be impeached. But he could. I'm not saying he would. I'm not saying he will. And I certainly agree with you that he's got certain issues in his wiring that either work for him or against him. But they may not guarantee, you know, him to continue to be safe from his own, the doings that he does, the traps that he creates for himself. So I think he should just do what I just said. That's what Clinton did.
Yes. And it did work well for Clinton.
Yeah, yeah.
However, there is a problem here for Democrats, and that is that Democrats are motivated, it seems to me, by the need to satisfy their rabid base, which is the core constituency that's driving presidential politics in primary season. And they've got to figure out, as you always do, but these are extreme cases here because the Democrats have gotten way more extreme. They've got people who don't believe in the American system of government who are adamantly insisting that certain things happen during primary season and certain issues be promoted and that Trump be dumped. And so they've got to figure out a way to thread the needle. How do they look like they're trying hard enough to dump Trump? And how do they stay close enough to the center that so whatever non-American system believing Democrat gets the nomination has a shot at winning a general election, even against Donald Trump in his damaged state?
Yeah, well, they're on a very dangerous mission if that's in fact their plan. If that's their strategy, it's very dangerous because they could in fact discredit themselves, which may be what's happening.
Yes,
and turn him into a martyr, and
so that
make
could
him stronger.
That could be some wisdom in his approach, is to make sure everybody knows that this awful impeachment thing is going on and that the Democrats are pushing it. And this is because they're so radicalized and they've got all, you know, because they're being run by by the Fab Four there. What are they? Or the Fab Three. What do they call the squad there?
The squad. They call it now AOC plus three.
Yes.
It used to be called the squad.
Okay, let's take a quick break. Michael Harrison is here. Stay with us on WTIC. WTIC. Michael Harrison is here. That's what we do on Fridays. We talk issues, and there are tons of them. So, yes, the Trump impeachment is going on. The NBA is having this huge fight with the Chinese. I didn't even realize, Michael, that that China is such a big country for 7 foot tall people from America.
Isn't it amazing?
It's amazing.
I've learned a lot about basketball in China in the last week, and it seems there are about 200 million ardent Chinese basketball fans in mainland China.
Isn't that amazing? I read the figure today, 300 million. But whichever it is,
well,
that's almost the population of the United States.
Exactly. No wonder the NAB backed down when China pulled the plug on the broadcasts and everything, because the general manager of the Houston Rockets tweeted that, you know, he supports the demonstrators in Hong Kong. And that one tweet from, a high-level executive, but not the highest-level executive in the league, the general manager, who's an employee of the Houston Rockets, put out this tweet, you know, supporting the demonstrators, that the Communist Party, which runs everything in China, decided to pull the plug unless he apologized or they retracted it. And so the NBA retracted it. He deleted the tweet, and there's a whole brouhaha of, oh, so the NBA is so concerned about human rights and justice and all that is holy and, you know, and blah, blah, blah. But when it comes to standing up to China, which is one of the most vicious totalitarian regimes and abusers in the world of human rights, you back down because there's a lot of money to be made. And boy, is there a lot of money to be made. It's eye-opening. And it goes back to what you and I were talking about last week, that we're in this frenemy relationship with China, that we're in a cold war with China. We certainly are. And we do business with them where millions of dollars
are being made. Yeah, we both depend on each other.
Right.
Bigger, more than anyone else in the world for our trade.
Crazy, isn't it? It's so counterintuitive to the world that we all grew up in.
Well, yes, it is, that we're supposed to just be enemies and life is simpler. But and this is part of what I think Trump is diving into and trying to correct some imbalances in his mind about, that we've allowed this friendship to flourish without taking care of our own values and our own needs. And
yes, you're right.
And he wants to push those back to the fore. But so the interesting thing about the NBA is the NBA has this long history. Like, they've been working for 40 years or something, 35 years, to develop this relationship with China. And it started with sending over of highlight tapes every week for the Chinese to show on TV, which they did. And a whole generation of Chinese NBA fans developed.
How interesting. What you just pointed out is that the NBA does the same tactics that China does. Slow, patient brainwashing.
Yes, they did that exactly. And they realized what the opportunity was. The NBA knew there was an opportunity over there. The other interesting thing was that Mao, who ruled China with an iron fist, he threw out a lot of American things during his era of the 70s and early 80s, maybe. But the thing that he didn't ban was the NBA, which actually had its origins with, what do you call it, when Christian missionaries go. I mean, there were missionaries going over to China, and they used basketball as a way to build bridges. And Mao allowed the American basketball to stay because it was very popular. And I was wondering why he would do such a thing, because this is how you get around politics and build bridges with cultures that some politicians might not want to be bridged. Mm-hmm. And that's what the NBA did. It allowed us to infect them with American excitement and commercialism and competition in a way that you would think that the communist leaders would never have wanted.
Wow. Great analysis. I love your use of the word infect them. We've infected them through basketball. That's cool.
Yes, with the disease of capitalism.
But, you know, they embrace capitalism when it's good for them, but they do it with a total iron hand.
Yes.
So it's not real capitalism. It's a form of communistic fascism. In other words, the Communist Party in Beijing, Xi Jinping and his cronies, they run the place with such an iron hand that when they do capitalism, it's more just a tool. The same way communism is a tool run by something that you can't define, that it's just a dictatorship. So, okay, we'll give you a little bit of economic incentive and a little bit of freedom, but you can't sell your company, or you can't buy your company, you can't own anything, and we take what we want. So it really isn't capitalism as we know it. It just has, it's like a flavor, a whiff of capitalism.
Yeah, but it's a lot more capitalism than you would have expected.
And until one mid-management guy sends out a tweet saying we support Hong Kong, and the entire 40-year enterprise comes tumbling down.
Well, at least it's threatened, yeah. And they don't want the Houston Rockets around anymore, and the Rockets have done great. Didn't the Rockets draft Yao Ming, the literally big Chinese basketball player.
Yes, and he's a superstar in China, so much so that he's back there now running the Chinese Basketball Association, the CBA.
And, all right, hang on with that thought. We'll talk more about this and other issues coming up. Michael Harrison is here because it's Friday on WTIC. Let me tell you. WTIC. Michael Harrison's friend George Harrison wrote that song. No relation.
Great
but
song.
They did hang around back in the day.
Great song, huh?
Isn't it an amazing song?
Yeah, yeah, it is. Everything those guys did was.
But it's not those guys, it's George. How was George so good when he was in a band with those guys? I'm still trying to figure that out.
Well, it's one of those things that you wonder how it happens, you know, the moon and the stars line up.
Exactly.
That actually Ringo was pretty much a kind of a genius in his own way as well. He was an important part, that you get four guys that are average guys from Liverpool form a band that when you first hear them, they don't really sound that great. And they turn into a musical and cultural force that we still can't wrap our brains around. It just keeps getting bigger and bigger.
Now, I love the first part of what you just said, though, that when they first were together, they didn't sound that great. If you listen to tapes of the Beatles a few months before they became the biggest thing in the history of mankind, they don't sound that great.
Right.
It happened very suddenly that Brian Epstein started messing around with their look and their approach, and then George Martin is on the scene, and then bang, they're a different band.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It definitely was a collaboration. However, when all is said and done, each of them, as you pointed out with George Harrison, were geniuses, creative geniuses. Paul McCartney is a walking, living phenomenon. He's probably the most famous person in the world.
And the richest, most successful musician in the history of the world, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I think there are statistics that back that up. I think you're right.
And that period of time when he was turning out incredible music is one of those magical moments in music history. Well, I guess you have to say he and Lennon together and the four of them together, because there was a dynamic, I think, where they brought out the best in each other.
Not one of them ever emerged as the biggest star on the Beatles or the leader of the Beatles.
You mean while they were the Beatles?
While they were the Beatles, yeah. 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 They were a choir, and they had a remarkable harmony. So, yeah, it is one of those things. But the point you make is really profound. You know, how did George Harrison wind up in that? And how did he turn into such a genius? And it just is the way things happen. It's places in the world suddenly become known for producing geniuses and greats in certain areas of endeavor. And I guess Liverpool at that time was one of those magical spots in the cosmos where, as I said, the moon and the stars lined up and you have these four guys that come together. And, you know, 50 years ago, the album Abbey Road was produced and released. Mm-hmm. It currently is number one on the charts.
It is. That's right. You want to know something else? Another bit of Beatles trivia? I don't know where this story was from. There was a shot of these two sort of dark-skinned guys and with a caption about them being terrorists. And they're called the Beatles. They refer to them as the Beatles because they have a Cockney accent.
So now anybody...
Yes, exactly.
It's now a generic race. It's an ethnicity. You're Beatles. What do you mean? We have a Cockney accent. You have hair. You sing.
Well, they didn't have the haircuts.
The Beatles didn't have the haircuts for very long. The Beatles only existed as the Beatles, the phenomenon, as a group for about 6 years.
Yeah. And they only put out albums like every 6 months or 4 months.
They put out a lot of good albums. And then, well, yeah, it's, you know, for you and I talking about how great the Beatles are is, you know, again, it's as cliched as saying that Columbus Day is a little bit of a weird holiday.
No, but it's important to work these things out because this whole dynamic, what you were alluding to about where does this lightning strike come from? What causes it?
Right.
And I had a friend who used to always say, I'd say somebody was really talented. He'd say, there's talent on every street corner. And I thought, yeah, that's right. There is talent on every street corner. The magic is when people fall together, events come together at the right time for certain people, and the natural ability somehow finds demand in the marketplace. The challenge with a band is, right, how do you stay together long enough if you are that good? How do you stand each other long enough to be able to reach the place you're likely to reach? If, you know, how many Michael Jordans are there who never make it to the NBA because they get a little piece of cartilage that falls out of place in their knee and that's it?
Mm-hmm.
You have to have a lot of luck.
Luck, yeah, luck plays a major role in it. Or is it fate? Or, you know, is there such a thing as luck? Or do people create their own opportunity?
Well, all that, I think.
These are questions, of course, that are never, you can't really answer them, but they're rhetorical questions that lie at the heart of what you're talking about. And it's fascinating.
And but they lie at the heart of our lives, too, don't they? I mean, our job is everybody's getting up on a surfboard every day and bringing all of their training to riding the wave of finding the best wave that day and hopping on it. And there's something that integrates all those different forces that you were just describing. Mm-hmm. To get a good ride.
Yes, yes, and it's very it's almost mystical. There are aspects to the human experience, especially collectively, especially how cities operate, especially how people drive on the highways and are in harmony with each other.
That's great. It's so true because we're such maniacs. If you focus in on any given person, you know, some people don't know how to merge onto the highway. They stop when they should be going 60 miles an hour. You get all these idiosyncrasies, the aggressive people who want to be going 100 and want to blame it on the person in front of them that they can't.
Right, right. And these people are terribly out of step with a larger force of nature. The same force of nature that, you know, some you ever see like a flock of a million birds?
Seagulls.
No, a flock of seagulls. They ran. No. a flock of birds. Thousands of birds. Millions of birds. You can't even count them. They're like a cloud in the sky. And they fly together. And then all of a sudden, the entire flock turns on a dime. The whole flock, all million birds, they turn on a dime. And they go in another direction. How did that happen?
Oh, they put a lot of practice, I'm sure. I mean, how else could you do it?
I wonder where they hold these practices.
They're doing it all
okay,
day, every
day. You sparrows, you go over there.
They're just looking down at the fish, copying what the fish do.
That's so funny.
Let's Tex is calling, wants to talk a little Beatles with us. Hi, Tex.
Hey, buddy, how are you?
Good.
So I was listening to your discussion about the Beatles, how you guys kind of went into this.
Yeah. What do you want to say about it?
So I've been in bands my whole life, and I've been playing music, and I've been a part of bands that aren't really going anywhere as far as morale in the studio or whatever. But there's a big factor involved. So whenever you mentioned listening to tapes and they weren't that great, and then all of a sudden, boom, there they were. Lots of times, there's a morale boost with the possibility of getting signed, or you're going to do a little mini tour, and then when you're playing in front of people, things happen inside you. That this force you're talking about, that you're able to create and you multiply your ability as far as you're playing to each other and writing to each other instead of performing for an audience. Mm. And when that happens, especially with the buildup of here comes the show, biggest crowd ever, you start doing things you normally, it's like a superpower. It just happens and egos go out the window. It turns into a one sound instead of one person in the band trying to stand out.
Wow, that's interesting. So suddenly the band is in the zone.
No, all the way in the zone. And then something you didn't like about Johnny, the bass player, it doesn't even exist anymore. It's all about helping him find that spot that makes you what you hear in your head. And then all the other guys are doing the same thing. And before you know it, you got a smoke cloud of just everybody's just creating. And then it does evolve into a power that's way bigger than yourself because you're feeding off everybody else's energy. And it's a positive thing. It's one of the most free, awesome feelings in the world when you find that zone, and it is something else.
Well, thank you for that text. That's a fascinating description because, Michael, if you think about the energy that the Beatles had to tap into in 1964 when they came over to America and all that stuff was going on, the whole world was rallying around them, and they were getting lifted up on the shoulders of millions of people. Imagine what that must have felt like.
Can't even imagine. They handled it beautifully. Is Tech still on the phone?
No.
Okay. I wonder about his band, you know.
Send us tapes, Tex.
Yeah, send us tapes, Tex. Is his name Tex?
Tex, yes.
As opposed to text. He's not a tech. I thought we were getting an audio text, you know. But no, he made a very good point. And they had a mutual benefit to being a group. And they were a group. And they had a harmony. And that lesson could be learned for all kinds of organizations. Of course, what happens is the same thing happens in a rock band that happens in a nation. You have the needs of the collective versus the desires of the individual. And therein lies the struggle. And George Harrison had to think about, my gosh, I'm a songwriter. I'm a brilliant songwriter, but I only get one song an album.
Yeah, yeah.
But is it worth being in the Beatles to have that My Guitar Gently Weeps, Taxman, or Here Comes the Sun, or Something in the Way She Moves, or While My Guitar Gently Weeps, or whatever song he did that was in the Beatles, while the other guys have 100 songs?
Yeah.
Or are you better off being on your own and having 100 songs but not being in the Beatles?
But he made the right decision, didn't he? He stored up all those songs. He got some of his masterpieces onto Beatles albums, which just allowed him to emerge. Here Comes the Sun and While My Guitar Gently Weeps.
Some of their greatest songs were by George Harrison.
Yes. And then he was able to put together a triple album for his first solo album that was amazing.
Yeah, that was amazing. All Things Must Pass was the name of that. And Phil Spector produced that. That was crazy.
And
although one of the discs was like all sitar music.
Yeah, there was a lot of crap in there. But that's what you expect from a triple album set, right?
Right.
All that sitar stuff. Somebody should have been arrested for inventing
that instrument. I went to Bangladesh, the concert for Bangladesh. I was at the afternoon of the two concerts. I was in the second row, sitting right behind Ravi Shankar, who opened it with all that sitar music. And everybody was like, oh, come on, get it over with. We want to see George Harrison and Bob Dylan and everybody.
Yeah.
And then for the second half, when it was the actual concert for Bangladesh, I remember Ravi Shankar was sitting there with a Brownie camera taking pictures. That was one of the great moments of my early, you know, media life, was going to that concert.
What are we talking, late 70s?
We're talking early 70s.
Yes, right after the Beatles broke up, right?
Yeah.
A couple of years after.
Yeah, very, very early.
Wow, what a good memory. Wouldn't you like to have those negatives right now?
Pictures taken of Ravi Shankar's, you know, and his daughter went on to become a jazz, you know, songstress.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Nora Jones is his daughter.
Nora Jones is his daughter. Wow.
I believe so, unless I'm talking through my hat.
No,
sometimes my wires get cross-circuited.
Well, it's a really nice hat, though.
And I make a mistake like that. Thank you.
Stay with us. Michael Harrison is here. It's Friday on WTIC. By the way, Michael, producer Mike says he's not going to play Beatles anymore because we get too distracted.
We did go off on a tangent, it is current news, and it is. I think we approached it from an interesting angle.
Well, I think we were brilliant.
I think that we are the Beatles of once a week, 1 hour get together on radio performances.
Yes, this was one of those. I mean, we were feeling that chemistry, and then Tex provided us that crowd feedback and
sent us
soaring into the zone, just like he was talking about.
Yeah, it was a marvelous thing. So let's talk now about the Dave Clark Five. No.
I thought you were going to say Clapton. Wait a second, we do have a couple of callers on this. Mike says we should get to Bob. Hi.
Hi, Todd.
Yes, sir.
Now, you just mentioned the Dave Clark Five, which brings me to my point. How many groups can you name where each individual in the band became famous, where their name is well known, each individual? Dave Clark Five. Can you name anybody else in the Dave Clark Five? I doubt it.
No.
Mike Smith.
Look at the Four Seasons.
The
famous group. Can you name anybody else but Frankie Valli?
Only Frankie Valli.
Yeah, that's a litmus test. That shows you
Bob Gordio.
The individual fame that these four band members had, that everybody can.
No, that's a good point, though. Probably the Rolling Stones.
That's like a litmus test.
I think the Stones would be the only other band where you could do several members. Thank you for that, Bob.
Yeah.
It's a good point. Maybe we should leave the music alone now.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Let's move on to Renaissance era opera.
Oh yeah, we haven't done opera in a couple of weeks, have we?
Yeah, and there's a demand for it. A lot of people, when I walk around and I say, "Hey, I'm the guy with Todd on Friday," they go, "How come you don't talk about opera?"
Mike says we should talk about vaping. Have you done any vaping?
No, I have not. There's something about vaping that gives me the creeps. I'm very irritated when I see young people trying to be hip the way we were when we smoked in the boys' room, which I never did. But I do remember that smoking was a status symbol in our generation. And today you look, you know, like you have an addiction. The vaping worries me. And what I do know is that if you're a parent and your kids are vaping, they are more likely, based on the medical evidence that exists, to have this lung problem if they're messing with the stuff that they're putting in it to smoke.
Yes, it's the tampered
marijuana.
Yeah. If you play it straight, it seems like you're okay with that. The early evidence is indicating.
But it can hook you on nicotine because it is a nicotine product.
Well, that's the idea, right? To transfer people onto smokeless nicotine who are addicted to cigarettes.
Right.
And that way they get a nice way to get off of the danger of the cancer.
Right. It's a, or the danger of just being addicted to smoking, because I understand that you could still get sick from it. The point is there's no easy way out, and it's also a doorway into becoming addicted. A lot of kids are picking up on smoking that they wouldn't have smoked otherwise because they think vaping is cool, because they see their friends doing it. So they're being hooked on cigarettes, hooked on nicotine, as opposed to using it as like you know, a drug to get off of a drug.
Meanwhile, there's no stench coming out of the bathroom, so the administrators can't tell when it's going on.
People are smoking in class. It looks with that with one of the products that you're sort of like sucking on your thumb
on your
drive.
Pencil. Oh, on your thumb drive.
on your thumb drive. And, you know, I don't want to say anything disparaging about any products out there, but it's you can smoke in public and get away with it where you can camouflage it because you can't see it and you can't smell it.
Yeah. But I also feel like there's a lot of overreacting going on.
There always is.
Which there always is.
Yeah, yeah.
Remember how upset people were about long hairs, speaking of the Beatles? Remember how long it took to come to terms? Go ahead.
Do you remember when we thought that the Beatles had long hair?
And that's true, too.
And if you look at them now, they have shorter hair than most people who have short hair?
Yes.
The Beatles haircut?
It was outrageous.
I'm going to just say one thing. When the Beatles came on the scene, I was much younger. I was a kid in school. It freed me to suddenly not have a big nose and big ears. I had a big nose and I had big ears as a kid, and the Beatles said, "Hey, grow your hair long, it's cool," and suddenly I looked like Ringo, and my whole life changed.
Really? You started getting the babes. Did you start talking with a Cockney accent?
Yes, of course.
Of course you did. All right, Michael Harrison, great to see you. We'll do it again next week.
Thanks, Todd. Thank you very much. Have a great weekend.
You too.